The Lord said that we are commanded. We are clear. The Lord clearly has commanded us to make a righteous judgment. What does it mean to make a righteous judgment? I'd like to elucidate a little bit on that and show you how that plays in today's parashah. This is good medicine for all of us, and especially for the leaders. When I say especially for leaders, that means that I'm singling out John Davis and Michael and Jean and Marilyn and Jackie. I'm singling these people out, and Joe. I'm not singling me out. Oh, yes, I am. Okay. But if you're the leader of a home, it applies to you. And if you're the husband, you are the leader of the home, so it applies to you. If you're the only person in your home, you're the adult of your home, then it applies to you. That the Lord has really, especially commanded, Sean, it applies to you now that you have a wife. Before, you could be whatever you wanted to be. You can't do that anymore. So in this week's reading, Shmini, Moses noted, that's in Leviticus 10, 16 through 20, Moses, the leader, that a sin offering was not attended to properly. That's in verse 16. In other words, he was the one who gave the instructions, because he got them from the Lord, and he gave the instructions. And he gave the instructions to Aaron and his sons, and they did it wrong. So therefore, the scripture makes it clear that he snapped at Aaron. He snapped at Eleazar and Itamar, the two sons. That's in verse 17. In fact, he's heard scolding them. Okay? Like we do, right? Somebody messed up in our jurisdiction, and we tend to just let him have it. Verses 17 and 18 of chapter 10, quote, "You did not do as I commanded." By way of response, he directs this at the two Kohanim that are on duty, which happened to be Aaron's sons. Aaron wasn't on duty at that time. He couldn't be on duty 24/7, okay? It would make no sense. But Aaron steps in and says, in effect, I'm paraphrasing here, okay, you're right. You're right. They didn't do it like you commanded. But here's what he says. But consider that they did this just like I would have. In other words, if you rebuke the sons, you need to rebuke me. Because I would have done it just that way too. The minute that Aaron takes up for his sons, Moses seems to consider the argument and actually backs off. Is that amazing or not? He backs off from his rebuke. That's in verse 20. That could just go. As we read this, it goes by. But the Bible shows that the back and forth between Moses and Aaron, it's quite an exchange between the anointed leader, okay, and the second in command, who happens to be older than he is. It's his own brother, and he's older than he is. And I think that requires us to a little bit of reflection. And that's what I'd like to speak on today. First of all, I want to tell you that the Torah doesn't spare our teacher. Moshe Rabbeinu means Moshe, our teacher. He doesn't spare Moses. If Moses is wrong, the Torah actually makes it very clear. And it shows it to us. He doesn't spare either our first Kohen Hagadol, which is Aaron. He's the first high priest. He's in the place that Yeshua is going to be forever and ever. And instead, the Torah gives us the details of the altercation based on a difference of opinion. Isn't that amazing? I think it is. Now, maybe you're not sensitive enough to understand what the context is, the background. At the beginning of chapter 10, Aaron had four sons, Nadab and Abihu, and Itamar, okay, and Eleazar. But the two oldest sons, Nadab and Abihu, invoked God's ire for not properly handling a tabernacle offering. And you know what happened? They are summarily executed. That word, summary execution, it goes to those of you that have served in the military. If you serve in the military, that's called a summary court-martial. It's not it's just the judge himself takes care of it. No witnesses, none of that. And executes the Lord executed that himself. It's totally understandable that from that point on, Aaron would be a little bit edgy. Okay? First of all, he'd be edgy because sometimes the kids do things. Children do stuff on their own. But sometimes, even though children do stuff on their own, it actually reflects on our leadership. Or it reflects on the fact that we didn't train them. We never explained that to them, so they do something wrong. And really, circumstances, well, they did something wrong, but are they justified if they didn't know anything about it? The two other sons are novices. They weren't the ones that the Bible talks about that, all four of them did something, but the oldest two were the ones that were originally put on the place and did these things. And the other two are younger and they're learning. But they're novices. They didn't grow up asking to be Kohen Hagadol. They didn't go to school to learn any of this. This is all new in the wilderness. And now they've become the object of the boss's displeasure because they botched up a major sacrifice in the sanctuary. By way of response, we hear Aaron immediately taking up for them to stave off any further chagrin. I imagine that Aaron is particularly raw and mindful of the fatal consequences of his sons not adhering to proper protocol. Because it was just a few verses ago that a reminder of what happened. What happens when Kohen HaGadol disregard the commandments of God about how to do something? I want to ask you a question as a dad or a mom. Would you not react in the same way? Or even in a worse way? At first, it's like, you want to get onto the son. Let me pick on dads and sons, because that's very typical. And the son might say, Dad, I didn't know. And the dad might go with something like, what do you mean you don't know? You observed me do this all these years? No. If they're truthful, they'd say, no, I don't pay attention to you, everything you do. You know, as I get older, I pay less attention to you. That might be a very truthful statement. We think that because we do it in front of them that they're going to get it if we don't say something. If we don't explicitly say, this is how you do this. Here's the deal, but we are commanded to judge. This is a judgment and making a decision the very way God judges. And how does God judge? Well, the Bible says that Adonai judges the intentions of the heart. Adonai judges the intention of the heart. Yes, in Leviticus 9:15, Moses told Aaron how to offer this offering. But it didn't say anything about the sons assisting on it. So by definition, it's like, well, Aaron, you were told, so you do it. And here comes a time when the sons are training and they're doing it, but they obviously don't know what's going on. They don't have it exactly right. They don't do it like Moses said. But as it turns out, Aaron takes up for them and says, I would have goofed the same way. In other words, what they learned from me, and I didn't get it either. So I know that you're mad at the sons that they actually did it. But Aaron takes on the responsibility that he's the one that's principally responsible for the offering. And that the impropriety noted by Moses needs to come to Aaron, not to the sons. The Jewish commentators have a ball field day with this kind of thing. And you're not aware of most of them. So there's two of them, Rashi and Hertz, that I want to quote. Rashi sheds light in this incident by taking that what Aaron did was take up for his subordinates, which is a characteristic of leaders. I want to tell you something. If you're not going to cover the back of your subordinates, you are in trouble. You're in trouble. However, another commentator, another famous one, Hertz, he thinks that given the backdrop of the death of Nadab and Abihu, that, quote, they all didn't deem themselves in a state of purity to share in the solemn rite. In other words, if two of them got, because they weren't good enough, then the other two are like, we're not good enough either. And that, okay? So for this commentator, the disregard is not the issue, but rather the issue is one that the sons here, you know what this is all about? They were supposed to eat it. John talked about that. They were supposed to eat it. They're supposed to make the offering and then eat it. Eat the sin offering. Think for a moment. You offer this offering on behalf of Israel for sin, and then you're supposed to enjoy it. And I tell you something, if you're guilty, if your hands are stained with blood, or if you just realize that you're not all of that in a bag of chips, then it might be like, I don't know if I want to do that. It says, if I ask you to come and do the Aaronic benediction as a dad, and you're looking at me like, I don't want to do it. Well, why don't you want to do it? Because I'm not worthy to do that. Because this morning I was mad at everybody. Perhaps. Or this morning I kicked the cat. Or this morning, you know, I just wasn't in the right mindset. So how am I going to come in and bless the congregation when I myself am in need of blessing? Do you understand that? Do you understand what the conundrum is here? Regardless, it was a mistake, doesn't it? Regardless, wasn't it a mistake? Yes, it was. But the anointed leader, Moses, no question this is the anointed leader. No question this is Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher. No question that he gave the instructions. They're written down in Leviticus 9. No question that's the way it's supposed to be. Evidently, was satisfied when he learned that Aaron said, they just would have done it like I did. And now he backs off because he realizes something that most leaders realize. If you beat the back of your subordinates and they bleed to death, you won't have any subordinates. You say, well, they're not going to bleed to death. Oh, yes, our words can really put somebody in a position. Our words, we can put somebody that's underneath us in a position of feeling like nothing, feeling like they're really messed up. And what we're supposed to do is, there are times that we need to correct. We bring out, this needs to be done. There are times that, chill, the answer is chill, chill. And there is a blessing in letting something like that go. The book of Proverbs talks about that. So to me, there's a couple of applications as we conclude. First application is that we think that God is angry. That we have this idea that the Lord just sits there with a big 2x4 and a whip. And when something goes wrong, that he's just going to go down and... But, you know, he records in the Torah that Moses had to eat it. Moses had to say, it's okay. He didn't say, do better next time. He didn't give a rebuke. He got into the conversation only to realize that, oh my gosh, the one that's in trouble is my brother. He's been doing all kinds of stuff with me. He went and talked to Pharaoh. He's been the one right by my side the whole time. And I don't need to rebuke him. Let me tell you that for every infraction against God, people think that he's just angry old man. Wrong. This is not the case. It's not borne out by casually reading the Torah. And let me also tell you, the Jews do not see Adonai as an angry God. They don't. Because he said, Adonai said, Adonai, Adonai, the most gracious and compassionate. What Marilyn quoted today, he being merciful forgives iniquity and does not destroy. Frequently he turns away his anger and does not stir up all of his wrath. That is God. That is Adonai. That's whom the Jewish people think as Adonai. Any other, if you are given the wrong idea about the Lord, and if you're showing that God, through you as being a parent, you're showing that he's like an angry old man, you need to come repent. Because people are learning about the Lord from you. And that's not who he is. Secondly, motive is more important than action. Motive is more important than action. Let me also tell you, TJ is not here. But in order to prove capital punishment, in order to prove murder, you have to prove motive. If you can't come up with a motive, you can't prosecute for murder. And you cannot ask for the capital punishment. There are other things. I mean, there's still a wrong. Somebody's dead, right? So it may be called manslaughter. There are all kinds of things. It may even be called an accident. The person's still dead. But it's not murder unless you prove motive. There has to be a motive. Motives matter, my friend. At the chapter's opening, the priest's mistake, the mistake by the first two sons, okay, towards their task, has to do with the fact that they were inebriated. The Bible actually tells us that. John said the other day that there were all kinds of things offered, grain, and he said wine, not grape juice, wine. And he also said, in some cases, a little stronger. I was sitting right there, and I heard him say that. I said, absolutely. So if that's not burned, and the Lord said, you drink it, the Lord would tell the priest to drink it? Think a minute. Okay? Anything in excess is bad news. So the answer to these things is not total prohibition. Now, if you are an abuser, if you are a recovering drug addict, or you've been to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, etc., there's not but one answer to you, and that is abstinence. Because you abused it to the point that it changes something in your system, and now your system is easily turned into that. We respect that. But because you did that, and because you have an injunction against you, that doesn't mean that we need to tell God, no, we can't have wine. No, we can't do kiddush. No, we can't do the Passover Seder because it involves wine. It's ridiculous. We get ridiculous. And the Lord's not ridiculous. So one of the things I love about Messianic Judaism, because in Marilyn's family, to even have a substance in your home, you're going to hell, and they tell you about it too. You're going straight to hell. Perhaps this misstep was motivated by a sober reverence called the fear of the Lord. Cut them some slack. Cut the two boys some slack. Maybe they just didn't think that they were worthy to eat a sin offering, no matter how good it was. In this case, you see that the judgment is averted. It's averted. It's removed. It's stopped. Because Adonai looks at the heart and not at the fact that someone goofed not doing his or her part. And the heart of those boys, according to their father, was pure. Well, in conclusion, those good news of the Torah are good news for you and me. This is really good news for you and I. Why, you may ask? Here's what Yeshua beckoned his followers to look deeply. John 7:24 says, Yeshua said, do not judge by appearance, but judge righteously. So judging by appearance is not good. We need to judge. What does it mean by judge righteously? Don't you think this agrees perfectly with what happened here in the Torah in Leviticus? It does. It agrees perfectly with that. You see, the Torah actually reminds us and requires us to look at matters deeply, inquiring of the particulars about the situation diligently, and judging people and circumstances righteously. My friends, this is good medicine for leaders. Absolutely good medicine for leaders. Should we all, therefore, because Yeshua said this to all of the disciples, not just to Peter, should we all do so in our affairs when it comes to others, recalling how gracious our God has been and how gracious he has set aside his anger and all those things when we deserved it and he didn't give it to us? In John 13, in the Passover, during the Passover, in John 13, verse 15, Yeshua said, I have given you an example. You should do for each other what I have done for you. I know the context was foot washing, but this way more than foot washing, because they have observed him kind of like eat it, let it go off the back. We've observed him do that over and over again. And in the Passion, we're going to observe how he expressed of the situation. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. You see, anything that you and I can do in comparison with what Yeshua has done for us, I have one word for it. It wanes. W-A-N-E-S. Anything that we can do in comparison to what Yeshua has done for us, it wanes. There's no comparison, in other words. So I remind us that the Torah reminded us to judge rightly. What does that mean? Look at the heart. Look, do what he does. How do you know the heart? Well, I guess you could take a knife and open it up and see. But instead, we use our words and we use our ways that do not harm the person to ask, you know, could it possibly have been that you didn't know? Could it possibly be that you didn't understand? Could it possibly be whatever? And sometimes I would dare say when it comes to our children, most of the time you find that the children were really kind of innocent. But something went wrong, so what do you learn in that? I tell you what I learned. I learned that my kids were always teaching me what I didn't do right. I learned that my kids were reminding me what I didn't teach them. I learned that my children really were the voice of God. You know, the voice of my conscience. It was in two kids. And those two kids would say things. When so you goofed, so, but dad, you get this, but dad, right? But dad, mom said that was okay. So what did we do? Maybe you'd be tempted to go and now give the second degree to mom. Right? You realize that if you do, you may not get food. If you do, you may not get a goodnight kiss. If you do, there might not be any underwear. And time to put underwear. And there may not be socks together. There might be all kinds of things, because if you really get mom all upset and mom just has to go for a while and be with the Lord, which could be a whole half day, okay, while she's over there talking to the Lord, doing a good thing, and you're sitting here going like, what did I just do? I just let my mouth, okay, shoot the person that is trying to serve me. And you realize that doesn't work. So what happens when the kids would say, mom said, all bets are off? That's what happened. When mom said, all bets are off. And I tell you what, you need to deal with the children, because they're watching to see what you're going to do. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't really know mom had said, please forgive me. Okay? That's not the time to go, mom, did you? You might have to wait till you're in the bed. But let me remind you that if you actually, like my wife, if you boo, you do boo, and her reaction is to start hitting with the legs, you might actually get hit kicked in the groin. And then you're like, that doesn't work too good. That was the wrong thing to do. So when is there a good time to tell mom? When she's sitting down, when she can't get near you, and so on. And then you do that, like, honey, the kids said, you said this. You might actually get this answer. I never said that. So what are you going to do now? The children misunderstood, obviously. So are we going to go back now and get the children, put them hanging by the 2x4, and start yelling at them? And, you know, all those things. Yeah, you misrepresented mom. Now you got two problems. The problem that you did the wrong, and now you made mom look bad. And so at that point, you know what a wise father would do? Eat it. Eat it. And if you haven't learned that, I don't know if you're prepared to rear children, because that's going to be happening a lot. A lot. Dad said, they tell mom, and dad didn't say anything. So it's a very important situation. If you don't handle it right, those children will grow without being shocked, without being like stunned or feeling having that they're good for nothing. You will not make mom not good for nothing, and you won't make dad good for nothing. A lot of times, we have somebody that we blamed it on, called Mr. Nobody. So the reason this is here is because Mr. Nobody did it. I found out that Mr. Nobody didn't leave when Marilyn left to go take care of her family, and I was left alone. Mr. Nobody was still there. And he was doing stuff to me. I'm going like, so it had to be Mr. Nobody. Who else would do that? Like, who left this thing here? Who left the thing open? Who left that open? Who left the water running? Who left the hot water running? Who left the stove running? I mean, usually it's when it's Marilyn, it's like, hey, are you trying to heat up the world? You know, or anything? And I find out that I did the same thing. I burned stuff. Now I have nobody to complain. It's burnt. It's burnt. I burned the pepperoni. That's like I committed a grave sin. So I had to throw all the pepperonis away. And now there's no more. Okay, so what in the world? You may need to adopt Mr. Nobody in your house. Because Mr. Nobody is a way to say the words, oh, well, it's not. We can't find him to talk to him because he's Mr. Nobody. Nobody did it. Agree with the kids. I didn't do it. Hey, mom, I didn't do it. Well, I certainly didn't do it. So who did it? Mr. Nobody did it. If you find Mr. Nobody, then invite him to your house. And he becomes a wonderful way to avert all kinds of issues in the family. If you have any kind of relationship, so those of you that are not have a relationship yet, for you, for example, or for you in the future, or for you girls, it's important to sometimes you just have to eat it. Sometimes you just have to, oh, well, Mr. Nobody did it. Don't put a name on him. Like, okay, Tim did it. Well, that Tim's my neighbor, so then you think that Tim's always, Tim is not in my house. Don't use Tim. Okay? You don't even need to use the cat. I do use the cat because all she can do is meow and ask for food. Okay? But Mr. Nobody, we discovered Mr. Nobody moved in our house on April 1 of 1986, and he's never left. Let's stand. 12:20. Almost. So, Father, in Yeshua's name, I thank you for that the Torah teaches us how to live life. That there are life lessons in here, big time lessons about how we handle things with our children, how we handle things in the workplace, how we handle things in especially if we are in any form of leadership. If I tell you something, if we take our vows for real, you know, the vows that we prayed, we said these vows when we got married, and then it's kind of like we don't really believe them anymore. If we take our vows for real, then we don't ever need to impute anything against our mate. Our mate made a big sacrifice to come live with us. We were not worthy of that person. And that person has made it their life calling to walk alongside of us. I tell you what, if you make the vow that if you say something against your wife or your wife against the husband, that you're going to take a knife and cut the tongue, you won't do it. Or you wouldn't have a tongue. We need to watch what we say. This right here gets us in trouble. It is, the book of Proverbs says that it is an awesome thing to ignore something that's happened against us. And the Torah proves it, and Yeshua calls for it. May as we go forward, become righteous judges. Amen.